Just like that. We'll calculate a new flight plan once we're underway. Instead of accelerating at 1/6 G as we've planned, we'll goose her up to 1/3 G and cut the flight time by more than half. Pancho looked unconvinced. You better bring an astrogator aboard. Nope. Pointing a finger at her, Dan said, You're it, kid. You and Amanda. I'm not bringing anybody into this that we don't absolutely need. I'm not so sure about this, Pancho said, warily. Don't go chicken on me, kid, Dan said. You two have been studying this point-and-shoot technique for a lot of weeks. If you can't do it, I've been wasting money on you. I can do it, Pancho said immediately. Okay, then. I'd just feel better if you had a real expert on board. No experts. Nobody else except the four of us. I don't want anybody tipped off about this, and that includes Humphreys. Pancho waved a hand nonchalantly. He hadn't said a word to me since we moved, sis. I don't think he knows where we stashed her, Dan said, reaching for his drink. He knows about everything. Not this flight, Dan said firmly. Nobody is going to know about this. Understand me? Don't even tell Amanda or Fuchs. This is just between you and me, kid. And the flight controllers, Pancho muttered. What? How are you going to get the flight controllers to go along with this? You can't just waltz aboard the Star Power and light her up without them doing it. Hell's bells, Dan. You won't even be able to hop up to the ship if they don't let you have a jumper and give you clearance for takeoff. Sipping at his brandy-laced ginger beer, Dan admitted, That's a problem I haven't worked out yet. It's a toughie. Yep, it is, Dan said, unable to suppress a grin. Pancho shook her head disapprovingly. You're enjoying this. Why not? Dan replied. The world's going to hell in a handbasket. The new morality is taking over the government. Humphreys is trying to screw me out of my own company. What could be more fun than hijacking my own spacecraft and riding it out to the belt? That's weird, Pancho murmured. Dan saw that his glass was empty. He pressed the button set into the table's edge to summon one of the squat little robots trundling through the crowd. Don't worry about the flight controllers, he said casually. We'll figure out a way around them. We? You and me. Hey, boss, I'm a pilot, not a woman of intrigue. You made a pretty good spy. I was lousy at it, and we both know it. You hacked into Humphreys' files. And he found out about it in half a minute, just about. We'll think of something, Dan said. Pancho nodded, then realized that she had already thought of something.
Mission Control Center.
The timing had to be just right. Nervous, despite being invisible, Pancho edged cautiously into the Armstrong Spaceport's Mission Control Center. It was nearly 2 a.m. The center was quiet, only two controllers on duty, and both of them were relaxed. One leaned back in his chair, while the other poured coffee at the little hot plate off by the door to the lab. Pancho hadn't told anyone about this caper. She thought it best to borrow the stealth suit and get the job done without bringing anyone else into the picture, not even Dan Randolph. The fewer people who knew about the stealth suit, the better. No landings or takeoffs were scheduled at this hour. The skeleton crew was in the control center strictly because prudent regulations required that the center always be manned, in case an emergency cropped up. How could there be an emergency? Pancho asked herself as she slowly tiptoed to the console farthest from those being used by the pair of controllers. Spacecraft don't just zoom in on the spur of the moment. Even a max thrust flight from one of the space stations orbiting Earth takes 6 hours to reach the moon. Plenty of time to rouse the whole crew of controllers if they were needed. The only possible emergency would be if one of the teams at a remote outpost on the lunar surface ran into a jam. Maybe if an astronomer at the far side observatory suddenly developed a case of appendicitis, and their radio was out, so they sent the poor boob on a ballistic lob to Selene without being able to alert anybody first. That was just about the only emergency Pancho could think of. Or if an invisible woman sneaked in and jiggered the flight schedule for tomorrow's launches. No, Pancho thought. Not tomorrow's. It's already past 2 a.m. Today's schedule. She sat at one of the unattended consoles, as far from the human controllers as possible, and waited for the woman at the coffee urn to return to her post. The overweight guy sitting at his console looked half asleep, feet up on the console, eyes closed, a pair of earphones clamped over his head. They weren't the regulation earphones, either. The guy was listening to music. Pancho could see the rhythmic bobbing of his head. "Hope it's a lullaby," she said to herself. The woman controller took a sip of her coffee and made a sour face. Then she looked straight at Pancho. Inside the stealth suit, Pancho froze. The moment passed. The woman's gaze shifted, and she started back toward her console, her steaming coffee mug in one hand. Pancho began to breathe again. The woman came back to her console next to the guy, gave him a disapproving frown, then sat down and clapped a regulation earphone and pin mic set to her head. Good, thought Pancho. The big chamber was too quiet to suit her. Normally, the rows of consoles would be filled with controllers talking to the traffic coming in and out of Cellini. There would be plenty of background chatter to hide her pecking at a keyboard. But then there wouldn't be any empty consoles to use. They'd all be occupied during normal working hours. Pancho tentatively tapped on the keyboard before her, once to silence the voice system, then again to call up the status board. The woman at her console did not hear the faint clicks, or, if she did, she paid no notice. The guy was definitely asleep, Pancho thought, his head lolling on his shoulders now, his bulging belly rising and falling in deep, slow breathing. Only one craft on the schedule, Pancho saw from the status display, due to land in 5 hours. Plenty of time for her to do what she had to do and get out before more controllers began filling in for the morning shift. Slowly, cautiously, with one eye on the bored woman sitting on the other side of the room, Pancho tapped out a set of instructions for the morning schedule. Then she got up, quietly left the control center, and returned the stealth suit to Ike Walton's locker, up in the storage area near the catacombs. She wondered if she'd ever need it again. Maybe I ought to keep it, she thought. But then Ike would discover it was gone sooner or later, and that would raise a stink. Better let it stay here, and just hope Ike doesn't change the combination on the lock. Sudden panic hit Pancho. Ellie was not in the locker where she had left her. Pancho had thought that the crate would snooze away in the chilly air of the storage area. She had fed Ellie a mouse only a day earlier, and that usually left the snake in a pleasantly drowsy state of digestion. But moving her to Walton's locker must have disturbed Ellie's torpor. The snake had slithered through one of the air slits in the bottom of the locker door. For several frantic minutes, Pancho searched for the crate. She found her at last, curled on the floor in front of a heating vent. But when she tried to pick Ellie up, the crate reared and hissed at her, spreading its bright blue hood menacingly. Pancho got down on both knees and frowned at the snake. "Don't you go hissy on me," she said sternly. "I know I disturbed your nap, but that's no reason to get sore." The snake's tongue flicked in and out, in and out. "That's right. Take a good sniff. It's me. And if you'll just calm yourself down, I'll wrap you around my nice warm ankle and we can get back home. Okay?" Ellie relaxed her hood and sank back into a tight little coil of glittering blue. Pancho slowly extended her hand, and when Ellie didn't react, she stroked the crate's head gently with one finger. "Come on, girl," she crooned. "We're going to take you home where you can sleep nice and comfy." "But not for long," Pancho added silently.
Humphreys Trust Research Center.
Martin Humphreys was awakened from a dream about Amanda by the insistent shrill of his personal phone. It wasn't a sexual dream. Strangely, when he dreamed of Amanda, it was never sexual. They were on a yacht this time, sailing across the calm azure sea, standing up by the prow and watching dolphins leaping across the ship's bow wave. He felt nervous on the water, unable to shake the fear of drowning even in this idyllic setting. Amanda stood by the rail, wearing a lovely pale blue dress, the soft breeze tousling her hair. She gazed at him with sad eyes. "I'll be leaving soon," she said unhappily. "You can't leave me," Humphreys said to her. "I won't let you leave." "I don't want to, darling, but they're forcing me to. I must go. I have no choice."
"Who?"
Humphrey.